Thanks so much. It's so great to see you guys. I know we have a couple dads in here. I just need to let you know I'm so thankful to see you here. It's such a blessing to your wives, I know, for you to be here. I do try to be very conscious of the fact that for some people it's not a comfortable position for a woman to be teaching a man. So I'm going to be addressing the moms here today, and we're just glad that you dads are here to help your wives to remember what was said. There's no elbow jabbing allowed on either part. Again, so please, I don't want to cause any offense. I'm really speaking to moms here, but you're certainly, we're excited to have you listening in. Psalm 113, not in its entirety, but most of it, says, "The Lord is exalted over all the nations. His glory is above the heavens. Who is like the Lord our God, the one who sits enthroned on high, who stooped down to look on the heavens and the earth? He raises the poor from the dust and lifts the needy from the ash heap. He seats them with princes, with the princes of their people. He settles the childless woman in her home as a joyful mother of children." When I read that, that was just so exciting to me, because the whole chapter is about the awesomeness of God. And the chapter ends with God's awesome role of settling the childless woman in her home as a joyful mother of children. And at about the time that I read this, I realized that I didn't feel like a very joyful mother of children. Now, I want you to think about it. You don't have to answer out loud if you don't want to. But what do you think of when I say a joyful mother of children? Just think about what you envision. Good. If you feel that way, I am excited. And I could let you come up here and help with this. But I want you to think about if this does describe you or if it doesn't describe you and why. Now, I had homeschooled for many, many years already and had had lots of children when I realized that I didn't feel very joyful. And I realized that part of that was because I had allowed a spirit of harshness to come into my heart. For some of you, it may be something totally different. I'm hoping that some of you are just in here for some reinforcement and you're not feeling unjoyful. But if it so happens that you feel that you've lost your joy, ask the Lord to reveal to you, what is it that I've allowed into my heart that is stealing that joy? Sometimes as homeschool moms, we feel like, we're with the kids 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Of course, we have wonderful relationships with our kids. We're spending all of this time with them. You know, what else could they want? But just because we're with them all the time doesn't mean we're with them all the time in our hearts. Sometimes we get so caught up in the everydayness of all those things that need to be done, especially the more kids you have and when you have lots of little ones, it can be so hard just staying on top of getting things done each day that we can lose sight of why we're doing what we're doing. So I want to suggest to you 4 steps to jumpstart your joy. The first is to have realistic expectations of your children. The second is to have realistic expectations of yourself. The third is to recognize spiritual warfare for what it is. And the fourth is to recognize the only source of true joy. First of all, realistic expectations of your children. First of all, our kids don't come into this world knowing what they need to do. They come into this world as little blank slates that we need to disciple. They don't have sanctified hearts. We just need to work with them. We need to have age-appropriate expectations of our children. You know, especially some of our homeschool kids. Especially if you have little girls who've been talking for a few years. If you have kids who have been very articulate for several years, it's very easy by the time they're about 4 or 5 years old to feel like they're 10 or 12 years old because they're so mature. Now, some of us have the opposite problem, but for many of our kids, we have these high expectations of them because their comprehension levels are so high. So it's very important to realize that just because your child has been talking and understanding you for a while, or maybe your child has been reading for a while, or has been involved in some of these other activities for a while, doesn't mean he's not still a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old emotionally and maturity-wise. So we want to have age-appropriate expectations of our kids. If you're not sure what's an age-appropriate expectation of things around the house, you might check a life skills checklist. If you need one, I've got a copy in Everyday Family Chore System. You can go online and do a search for age-appropriate expectations. Just be familiar with the developmental stages. It's been a long day. Developmental stages of children and what you can expect from your kids so that you have those age-appropriate expectations. You also want to just say yes. We grow up with the just say no mentality. I discovered it was a lot easier for me to say no to my kids. It was the easy way out. It was the quick answer. You know, can I go over to so-and-so's house? No, you haven't finished your chores. No, you haven't finished your schoolwork. No, you haven't emptied the trash or whatever. May I have dessert? No, you didn't finish your supper. I could just as easily turn those no's into yeses by saying, yes, you are welcome to go, as long as it's an okay option. Yes, you are welcome to go to so-and-so's house as soon as you empty the dishwasher, as soon as you've finished your math, as soon as you've done your chores. Sure, if we have dessert, we're offering that evening. Sure, you are welcome to dessert as soon as you've finished your healthy food. Now whose responsibility is it if they don't get it? I'm the one who said yes. I'm the one who said it's okay. Whose fault is it now if they didn't get dessert? Whose fault is it if they didn't get to play next door? It's their own fault. The concept of personal responsibility. We should take that one to Washington. Okay. Another thing that I learned in having realistic expectations of my children is to not take it personally when things happen. All right, let's see. Things are going to happen in the day. It would be great if my kids got up every day and they behaved like I would love them to behave. But the fact is, they're kids. It's part of the job that these things are going to happen. Now, how do you pronounce your first name? Is it Rena or Rina?
Rena.
Rena. I'm going to use you as an example because I know you're a good sport, because she already talked to me earlier this morning. Okay, let's imagine that Rena was on her way to the convention center this morning, and she was just so excited to be coming to the convention, and she was just praising the Lord and had the music cranked up, and she was just singing and praising God and didn't pay any attention to the fact that the speed limit went down. Until she saw because I know this would never happen to her. This is just a hypothetical situation. Until she saw these little blue lights flashing in the back of behind her car. So she pulls over, and the guy walks up to the window, and he knocks on the window, and he rolls it down. And what's he usually ask first? Do you know why I stopped you? What a wretched question. Because all you can think of is, I don't know if I'm going to give the right answer or if I'm going to give him more ammunition for something he didn't see the first time. But let's imagine that this is going like some of us run in our day. So the officer walks up to Rena, and says, how many signs do we have to put up to say 35 miles an hour before you notice that the speed limit's not 45 here anymore? I mean, can you not read? And look at the back of your car. How many kids ate French fries in that back seat in the last week? Do you not know how to clean it? And when's the last time you ran through a car wash? I mean, look at your car. Look at your car. And have you checked the taillights lately? Good grief, woman. How many violations do you think we can come up with in one day? No. He doesn't do that. He walks up to you and he says, why did I stop you? And you tell him. And you can give him all kinds of good excuses, and he's going to say, as he writes out the ticket, right? And then he hands it to you and he says, don't let it happen again. Have a good day. And he smiles and he gets back in the car. We need to take that into consideration too. He got up that morning probably hoping that everybody would just obey the law. Unless he had a quota and he's trying to fill it or something. Then he's looking for all of this. But if he doesn't have a quota, then he'd love it if he could get up every morning and not have to worry about getting shot, not have to worry about stopping a car and having somebody do something to him or run him over or find out that something terrible had happened to somebody. He would love to just go through his day and everybody obeys the rules. Just like I would love to get up, or you would love to get up in the morning and find out that, you know, one of the kids has said, oh, Mom, I knew you were tired, so I let you sleep till 9. And I changed all the baby's diapers, and I washed them while I was at it. And I fixed breakfast for everybody, and here's breakfast for you. And it doesn't smell burnt or anything. And here's breakfast for you. And I've started everybody on their schoolwork, and we're almost finished for the day, and we hope you're having a wonderful time. What happens? At about 7 o'clock, you hear something crash downstairs. You know something's broken. And then you hear, Mom's going to hurt you. And, you know, you don't even want to go downstairs and look now. And so, but if you don't take it personally, if you just realize that things are going to happen in the day, kids are going to push the envelope, don't take it personally. Build time into your day. Just smile. And just think of yourself as the policeman who would love to have that day, but things are just going to happen. So don't take it personally. That's having realistic expectations of your children. They're kids. They're just going to be kids. Second is have realistic expectations of yourself. Comparisons are the worst things. Don't compare yourself to your neighbors, to your support group leader, to the speakers at the convention. I mean, you don't know what we go through in the rest of our lives. You don't know what season of life your neighbor is in. You don't know what's going on with your support group leader. You have your family. God has put you in your circumstances. Compare yourself to what God has given you for your day. Evaluate if you've made those things priorities and go from there. Recognize that you have your own gifts. You're in your own situation. You have your own specific family. You have your own limitations. Recognize that you have needs. It's hard for us to stay on top of things. It's hard for us to have realistic expectations of ourselves. It's hard for us to think rationally and be joyful when we're not getting enough sleep, when we're not eating well, when we're not getting nurturing emotionally from members of our family. So recognize that you have needs. Now, I'm not saying we're going to make it all about us. I'm just saying, be realistic. If you're totally ignoring all of those physical and physiological and emotional needs that you have, you cannot expect joy to flow out of you. So think about what some of the problem areas are and what you can do about them. Things that are problem areas for you in your life. So what are those things that are making you feel unjoyful? Now, for me, like I mentioned before, I had allowed a spirit of harshness to come in. And I didn't always speak gently to my children. It was very, very, and I mean, I'm ashamed to look back at it. It's not something I'm proud of, but I feel I need to be honest with you all because I want you to realize some of you may be in that kind of situation or in something similar, and you feel that it's not something you can admit to anybody because that makes you a lousy person and everybody else is this wonderful mom. So I want you to know that we all have our shortcomings, and we all just have to pray through them. And I decided that I needed to find a way to fix that. So I realized that it was very, very difficult for me to be ugly to my children when I was smiling or when I was saying, I am mildly annoyed. Now I want you to try this. You're not allowed to say, I'm so mad or I'm so angry or I'm so upset. But imagine that the big crash has happened. You've just seen the pile. One of my kids dropped 10 dinner plates in a pile. So this is after being told several times you need to only carry one or two at a time because if you don't, you may drop them. So anyway, we won't go there. I was mildly annoyed. So anyway, so I want you to practice this. I want you to turn to your neighbor, and I want you to, as grumpily as you can, say, I am mildly annoyed. Okay. Okay. Now, how mean do you look? Come on. How mean do you guys look at each other? Okay. So if you just have to come up, if you just have to come up with a little catchphrase for yourself, we had a little sign for years. It was a little round sign that somebody put on a popsicle stick that said, no DBA. And it came from a phrase that was an inside joke with my father-in-law. It was, no darn bad attitude allowed. And so when things got really tense, then one of the kids would just sneak up the little sign and go, and wave it, and it says, no DBA. Well, it's really hard. I mean, you just have to laugh. So you just have to come up with those little inside jokes for yourself that will work. So the third thing is to recognize spiritual warfare for what it is. Joy is a fruit of the Spirit, which means It's going to grow on you if you're a, we'll just call you a spiritual tree. Okay, as a Christian, then the remember that a tree doesn't have to try hard to make fruit. An apple tree just grows apples because it's an apple tree. It's designed to grow apples. As a believer, I am going to produce joy. Joy is going to be produced as a fruit of my life because I'm a believer, if everything's flowing as it should. But a tree does need to fight the worms because there's going to be things that come in and want to eat that fruit. So there are going to be things in our lives that are going to try to spoil that fruit of joy. Your mind is the enemy's target. I remember one time I was at the house and one of the girls came in and I had one of those rough days where I felt sad inside. I couldn't explain why. It was almost like having this spirit, like a despair inside. I wasn't sobbing or, you know, anything, but I just had this really heavy feeling and I was just trying to think that this isn't really anything I need to worry about. But about that time, one of my girls came in and, as only girls I think can do, threw herself over my lap and sobbed uncontrollably about something that seemed trivial at the time. But she was quite overwhelmed with despair. And I realized, you know, I stopped and I thought, what is going on here? She's like this over what seems like nothing. And I realize this a lot the same way I'm feeling. It's almost as if there's a spirit of despair in the house. And I had to pray against it. I just had to pray against a spirit of despair in our home. And immediately, as soon as I prayed, you know, those little, when your kid's on your lap and she's so uncontrollable, she's like, she can't get her breath. Well, you know, so they started getting slower. She started to calm down, and I could feel the calmness coming. So I'm not saying that it's always some spiritual attack when you're having a bad day. But I am saying that if you have one of those days when you look around and everybody's got something going on, ask yourself, ask God to reveal to you, is there something here I need to be dealing with in the spirit? We want to take captive every thought. The Bible tells us to take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ. Every harsh thought that I have about my children, every selfish thought I have about my life and what I could be doing or what I should be doing or if only I had this or my life was different. Those false thoughts that I'm a bad mom, that I'm a bad wife, all those lies that the enemy wants me to believe to steal my joy, I need to take captive those thoughts. The enemy cannot take away your joy, but he can influence you to give it up. He can cause enough pressure on you that you willingly give it up. So we don't want to give him that opportunity. He's going to attack homeschool families because our hearts are for our kids. So there's going to be an extra measure of attack there. We also want to recognize the source of true joy. The joy of the Lord is our strength. There was a song I used to teach to my kids when they were little. One of the first things I ever taught them, because I could teach them to clap and all that stuff. Some of you may know it, and my voice is shot, so I'm not here as the singer, but the song says, "Break forth into joy, O my soul. Break forth into joy, O my soul. In the presence of the Lord, there is joy forevermore. Break forth into joy, O my soul." And I liked to sing that with my babies because I wanted them to realize, it was a reminder to me. The song says, "Break forth into joy, O my soul." It's a commandment to my soul. I can command my soul, my mind, my will, my emotions to break forth into joy. And it's in the Lord's presence that I have that joy. So it's a choice many times that I make to give up whatever is attacking that joy. There's a little story that I read recently. Some of you may have seen this, and I'm going to tell you where. Some of you, when we're done, are going to say, "Where can I get that?" And you can find it online on the internet. It's by Nicole Johnson, and the story is called "The Invisible Mother." I'm just going to read this because it's the easiest way to do this. It all began to make sense. The blank stares, the lack of response, the way one of the kids would walk into the room while I'm on the phone and ask to be taken to the store. Inside, I'm thinking, "Can't you see I'm on the phone?" Well, obviously not. No one can see if I'm on the phone, or if I'm cooking, or if I'm sweeping the floor, or standing on my head in the corner, because nobody can see me at all. I'm invisible. The invisible mom. Some days I'm only a pair of hands, nothing more. Can you fix this? Can you tie this? Can you open this? Some days I'm not a pair of hands. I'm not even a human being. I'm a clock to ask, what time is it? I'm a satellite guy to answer, what number is the Disney Channel? Or I'm a car to order, I need to be picked up at 5:30. I was certain that these were the hands that once held books, and the eyes that once studied history, and the mind that graduated summa cum laude from college. But now they had disappeared into the peanut butter, never to be seen again. She's going, she's going, she's gone. Well, one night, a group of us were having dinner, celebrating the return of a friend from England. Now, Janice had just gotten back from a fabulous trip. She was going on and on about the hotel that she'd stayed in, and I was sitting there looking around at the others, all put together so well. You ever do that? You go out with some of your friends from another life, and you think, wow, do I feel frumpy next to them? Maybe nobody else has felt that way. It was hard not to compare and feel sorry for myself. I was feeling pretty pathetic when Janice turned to me with a beautifully wrapped package and said, I brought you this. It was a book on the great cathedrals of Europe. I wasn't exactly sure why she'd given it to me until I read her inscription. To my dear friend, with admiration for the greatness of what you are building when nobody sees. In the days ahead, I would devour the book, and I would discover what would become for me 4 life-changing truths after which I could pattern my work. No one can say who built the great cathedrals. We don't have any record of their names. These builders gave their whole lives. How many of y'all have studied cathedrals? You know, you do the Middle Ages and all that, and you study. Okay. These builders gave their whole lives for a work they would never see finished. They made great sacrifices, and they expected no credit. The passion of their building was fueled by their faith that the eyes of God saw everything. There's a legendary story in the book of a rich man who came to visit the cathedral while it was being built, and he saw a workman carving a tiny bird on the inside of a beam. He was really puzzled, and he asked the man, why are you spending so much time carving that bird into a beam that's going to be covered up by the roof? Nobody's going to even see it. And the workman replied, because God sees. I closed the book, feeling the missing piece fall into place. It was almost as if I heard God whispering to me, I see you. I see the sacrifices you make every day, even when no one around you does. No act of kindness you've done, no sequin you've sewn on, no cupcake you've ever baked, no co-op class you've taught, no field trip you've ever planned, that's not in there, but that's my addition, is too small for me to notice and smile over. You are building a great cathedral, but you can't see right now what it'll become. At times, my invisibility feels like an affliction, but it's not a disease that's erasing my life. It's the cure for the disease of my own self-centeredness. It's the antidote to my strong, stubborn pride. I keep the right perspective when I see myself as a great builder, as one of the people who show up at a job that they'll never see finished, to work on something that their name will never, ever be on. The writer of the book went on so far to say that no cathedrals could ever be built in our lifetime because there are so few people willing to sacrifice to that degree. When I think about it, I don't want my son to tell the friend he's bringing home from college for Thanksgiving, my mom gets up at 4:00 in the morning and bakes homemade pies, and then she hand bastes a turkey for 3 hours and presses all the linens for the table. That would just mean that I'd build a shrine or a monument to myself. I just want him to come home. And then if there's anything more to say to his friend, I want him to add, you're going to love it at my house. As mothers, sorry, this truly touches me. As mothers, we're building great cathedrals. We cannot be seen if we're doing it right. And one day, it's very possible that the world will marvel not only at what we've built, but at the beauty that has been added to the world by the sacrifices of invisible women. I just want to encourage you all. This is a little bit of a shorter workshop than some of the others. I just want to encourage you. God has just given you such a work. You are making such sacrifices for your children. And it feels like you're always going to have little kids. Some of you feel like you're never going to be out of diapers. Well, they will never. You're out, hopefully. But they'll never be out of diapers. But this is just a season. Enjoy that season. Embrace that season. I can still remember being in the hospital giving birth to my first baby. My My oldest is 41 and my youngest is 21 now. And I would give anything to have little kids in the house again. I loved my babies. I didn't always feel joyful at the time, but looking back, it was such a wonderful season of life. Enjoy your babies. Enjoy your toddlers. Enjoy spending time with those teens, because these little seasons pass so quickly and we don't get them back. There will be time later. There will be another season of life for you to get involved in something else that you're passionate about. Some of us think, in another life I was such and such. Maybe you'll get to do that again. Maybe God will give you something even better. So enjoy your babies. Give those relationships to God to build in your lives. And I just want to encourage you, in the words of Jude 24, to him who is able to keep you from falling and to present you before his glorious presence without fault and with great joy, to the only God, our Savior, be glory, majesty, power, and authority through Jesus Christ our Lord, before all ages, now and forevermore. Amen. I just want to give that to you today. I don't normally do this. I have never, ever done this before. I'm going to tell you that some of you, if you would like to leave, we are a little early, you are welcome to go. And some of you, I would encourage, if you would like to stay here, I would love to pray with you. So if anybody, this is no condemnation. If you get up and leave, we will assume you needed to go to the bathroom, you needed to get a drink of water, you're meeting somebody, you have something you have to pick up in the exhibit hall. It's not any reflection on your spirituality. But I do want to encourage you, stay and pray with each other, stay and visit with each other over some of the things that may be dragging you down right now. I just want to take these last, we have almost another 20 minutes that we can spend together. So I encourage you to spend that time together, be in a little small group. If you don't have a little small group, let's make little small groups. And those of you who don't feel led to do that right now, you are at liberty to leave. I thank you so much. I am so pleased that you all are here today, that you're here at this convention, that you have dedicated this time, this season of your life, to blessing your children. And I can't even express enough to you my admiration and my appreciation for what I know you're sacrificing to be with your family. So thank you all so much for being here today, and I'll look forward to sharing with you privately.